I know that there are so many people like me who have had an experience like that, who have been green, who have worked up the courage to bring something up at work, something personal, something really hard, something about their health, something that doesn't, a lot of people would say is inappropriate for work because it makes people uncomfortable, but it's a lot of people's reality. And I know so many of those people have that kind of experience where someone tells them, please keep that to yourself, or don't talk about that, or I don't want to hear this. And they never talk about it again. And then you hear companies say, I want you to bring your whole authentic self to work. And people are like, you're saying one thing and showing me another.
Welcome to Want to Work There, a podcast that explores what really makes a company a great place to work. I'm your host, Jill Felska, and together we'll explore not only what goes into building a great company culture, but also exactly how to implement those best practices within your own workplace. If you're here, you believe that a better world of work is possible, and I can't wait to build it together. Let's go. Welcome back to the Want to Work There podcast. Today, we are going to be chatting with Leah Sait. And Leah is someone I met just recently and immediately hit it off with, knew that she was someone I was going to be keeping in touch with for a long time. But I, of course, had to ask her the question that I ask everybody, which is, what area, topic, experience are you most passionate about when it comes to improving the workplace? And her response immediately was very palpable. And she shared so much about disability and accommodations in the workplace. So, Leah, welcome. So glad to have you on today.
Thank you so much, Jill. I'm really, really excited to chat.
Yes. And tell us a little bit about why this topic is so important to you.
Absolutely. I think it's really important. Disability inclusion in the workplace is something that just I don't see talked about enough. I feel like there's been a big push towards inclusion in the workplace, especially in the last 4 years, but that's been very limited in my view. There's been a lot of talk about inclusion of working parents, inclusion of women, inclusion of people of color. I really haven't seen that conversation extend out to people with disabilities and disabled employees. In some levels, there have been a couple of things, little nuggets shared about including neurodivergence and people who are neuroatypical, but that really seems to have been happening in niche corners of the internet and LinkedIn. I think I'm seeing it a lot because of the bubble that I'm in with disability advocates, but I haven't seen it as widespread as some of the other things that have been talked about in regards to inclusion. So I think it's something that's missing. And if companies really want to be inclusive, they need to be thinking about that on multiple levels.
Yeah, it's an incredibly important point. And I think, you know, in any conversation that you're having around DEI, we sometimes tend to limit ourselves in what that means or what we're thinking about. And there's so many different factors that go into it, including disability. So I'm really excited to sort of dive a little bit more into that space and get your greatest thoughts and expertise around what that kind of looks like. So one of the areas I'd love to start in is just sort of an explanation. I think the word that I hear most often sort of talked about along with disability is this idea of accommodations. And I also think that there is a lot of misunderstanding about what that actually means. So could you share a little bit around what an accommodation is, what that looks like?
Absolutely. And like you said, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding. So I'll start with what an accommodation is not. A lot of people get really defensive when we start talking about accommodations, and they start saying these really over-the-top things like, well, if I'm hiring someone to do this job, but they physically can't do that job, I still have to hire them. Like, no, that's not what we're saying at all. Not removing the essential job functions from the tasks that, you know, someone's responsible for. It's if you're hiring someone whose primary job, I'll give an example. I used to work at a paint company. If you're hiring someone whose primary job is to mix and tint paint samples, you may not be able to make an accommodation if you have a candidate who's colorblind. But if you're hiring for someone to work at a paint store where they might do any number of things like stock shelves, run the register, generally keep things clean, maybe tinting isn't actually an essential job function and you can make that accommodation of removing that part of the job duties. So we do need to be careful how we define essential job functions. I think a lot of companies go really overboard with what they think is essential. I mean, how many job descriptions have you seen that say you must be able to lift up to 35 pounds? And this is for like an office job. Yeah. It's like an office job, someone doing data entry or software engineering. Like if you're not stocking the shelves at a big box store or something, or having to carry packages or do deliveries, you probably don't need to lift 35 pounds as an essential job function, especially when so many of us are working remote. What are we lifting? Our laptops? That's not 35 pounds. So accommodations are what they really are, to get back to your question about the definition, is they're changes or adjustments that enable people to do their jobs. And that's really it. It's that simple. And this can look like any number of things. It's not one specific thing. It's going to vary. It can be physical changes to a workplace, like adding ramps or widening a doorway. It can be assistive technology, including screen readers or adding captions, modified work schedules, additional training. There's any number of things. It can look like so many things. And I think people hear accommodation and they have a really narrow view of it. So I want to do what I can to expand that.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it is, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think people go to sort of the compliance side of things when they hear the word accommodations. And it's like, oh, legally, we're going to be held responsible for this thing. And I don't know if I'm correct in thinking that, but anytime something is playing with law or changing sort of things that you need to keep up with from a compliance standpoint, I think people get itchy. How much is accommodations tied to something that you legally have to do versus something that you're doing to accommodate what people need from you in their workplace to do their job?
You've hit it on the head. There is a legal element, and there always is going to be, and that makes people nervous. As soon as they hear there's a law about this, they go, well, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know the law. Like, I haven't read the whole Americans with Disabilities Act. I don't know what I need to do. And really, I mean, I'll talk about this more, but for me, it's less about the law and more about being a human. Like, you don't know what all of the laws say. You haven't read every single law put out by the EEOC, but you know how to treat people with respect and treat people like a person. That's really what it comes down to, is just treating people in a human way. If someone came to you and said, hey, I really can't work with a Mac, I prefer to use a Windows computer, depending on your organization, that might be something you can do. That's an accommodation. It's really not anything more intense than that. I mean, an accommodation can even be something as simple as, I can't see without like squinting, glasses and contact lenses are an accommodation. Like, it's not scary. It's something that people deal with all the time.
Yes. And that's why I think these conversations are so important, because when you sort of debunk those pieces and really bring it back to the core of what it is, which is what you just said, it's about treating people like humans, having empathy, having a level of respect. It doesn't have to be, oh, I know, like you said, every single line item of, no one does. No one knows every single line item.
Lawyers don't know it.
Lawyers. That is a piece that, sure, down the road you can figure out. But if you're treating someone with respect, odds are, I would assume most times, it's not even going to come to that. It's just about them feeling safe and having the conversation. So I want to kind of dive into like the employee life cycle of what this could look like. I think we'll spend the majority of our time talking about what this looks like once you're employed and sort of are in a company and how you navigate that. But I am curious, when it comes to the hiring process, if someone has a known disability, is there any guidance around should they or should they not disclose that during the hiring process?
Yeah, that's definitely something I've thought about a lot. And obviously, first off, if you need accommodations for an interview, you may not have a choice about disclosing. Mm. You may need to ask, like, okay, coming to your office. Is there an elevator I can use? Okay, I'm coming to your office. I'm going to need to bring an interpreter with me, or I'm going to need to bring someone who can sign with me. But for many of us, the disability may be invisible or something that wouldn't affect an interview experience. Like if you're a wheelchair user and all of your interviews are on Zoom, there may not need to be any accommodations you need to ask for that interview experience, but then it may affect you once you're working there. But otherwise, this is something that people have big feelings about, disclosing during an interview process. And there's a couple schools of thought around this. So on one hand, if you don't disclose, you're reducing potential bias, unconscious or otherwise, that may have an effect on how the interviewer views you. They may think in the back of your mind, like, oh, she's not capable of doing the work, or, oh, I don't think he could handle it here. And if you don't disclose, it removes any of those thoughts, whether they're intentional or otherwise. On the other hand, if you do choose to disclose, you're potentially weeding out employers who don't have inclusive cultures and may treat you poorly later. That's not guaranteed, but like I said, it's one school of thought. Personally, I did disclose my disability once overtly, and I felt good about that. It was a very safe interview environment, and they really, really showed me how their culture was inclusive. They told me about it, but they went beyond that in showing it during the interview process. And that's something that anyone can really put words on a website about, we have an inclusive culture, but it's really the action that matters. So in that case, I felt good about saying, hey, here's my experience. And I used that in a way, rather than requesting an accommodation, I used that to describe my own experience being in an HR space and understanding different employee needs, how I have a personal relationship to that. So I've done it once. I haven't always done it, but I am pretty public about my disability on LinkedIn. So any employer who went and looked at anything I've put out there, anything I've published, it's going to be pretty obvious. I know some employees don't look at anything. So the way I look at it is it's kind of out there. I know not everyone is public about it. I know that's not necessarily a super clear answer, but really the answer is it depends on whether you should disclose or not, depending on what you know about the company, what you know about the culture, what you know about the interviewers, what your priorities are, and even, you know, how badly you need a job. If you're in a position where any port in a storm, and if you've been unemployed, you've been laid off, and you just need something, then maybe you're going to be a little more flexible in that interview, not bring things up, maybe put up with some things that you wouldn't in a different sort of economy.
I think you're spot on. And it's one, it's a big question and there's a lot of nuance. So it's exactly what you're saying. It depends on you and your circumstance, I think is probably the best general advice you could give. I am curious, in the experience where you did disclose, can you remember? So I totally agree, words versus behaviors, huge. Can you remember any of the behaviors that they did or things that really did make you feel safe?
First off, they not just offered accommodations. They didn't just say, oh, if you need accommodations, let us know. It's really easy to do that. They actually had a form when I was filling out my availability for the interview saying, would you like us to make sure the captions are turned on? Would you like us to include an interpreter in this call? Would you like us to, they had options. They're like, these are the things we are willing and able to put out there straight off the bat. If you need something beyond this, here's space to let us know what that is. And so it wasn't just tell us what you need. It was here's where we can meet you and what we're already prepared to do. And that alone showed me this is something that they've thought about. This is something that they've had experience with. And it felt like something where my experience wasn't going to be brand new to them. And that felt really safe. The other thing they did, which I think was incredible, is I had, I think, 3 interviews back to back on the same day. They were all virtual, but they sent me an email the day before and they said, hey, we know that this is a lot we're asking out of your day. Interviewing can be hard and exhausting. Here's a $15 DoorDash credit for you to order yourself lunch in between interviews so that you can have lunch on us and not have to worry about that for a day when we want you to focus on these conversations. And that just felt like such a really nice human touch. It wasn't like, we're treating you like a cog. We're just going to chug through these interviews. It was, we're seeing you as a person from the get-go.
It's the thought.
Exactly.
And that, like you said, speaks to, if they put this amount of thought into the interview process, I can only imagine the thought that they put into caring for their employees who are working for them. So it translates. The thing that you said, my experience wasn't going to be brand new to them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is such a powerful piece that we often don't think about. It's like being the first person in a startup who is going to be out on parental leave.
Yep.
Or the like all of these things, when you're the first, you really do have to put yourself out there and be the one that's advocating for yourself and what you need. And when you know that a team, like you said, shows up, gives you examples of things that they could do and ways that they could, like that is such a, it is simple. It's not small.
Yes.
It's a simple thing that a company did that made your experience exceptional and showed you, like you said, that it was a space that you could show up as yourself in.
Exactly.
I love that.
And it was
so cool.
And someone's always going to be the first. And so maybe you're going to have this interview experience and you are the first and they're not going to know. But if you're in a position where you're comfortable and the company is showing you that they're willing to meet you halfway and learn, and they're not trying to be perfect, they're just trying to learn and grow, and they're open to your feedback, I think it's really valuable when you're able to give that feedback of, hey, this is something that I think is missing. At that same company, we were in a large high-rise building in downtown San Francisco, and the building had a rule that nothing with wheels was allowed to be in their main elevator, and that anything with wheels had to be in the service elevator in the back. And that was mainly for people who were bicycling to the office. If you're biking and you need to bring your bike inside, they didn't want the bikes in the elevator. And I understand that. But I wrote feedback. The way this is worded makes it sound like people who use wheelchairs can't use the lobby. And I don't want humans to have to feel like they have to go into a service elevator, because I've had to do that. It's unpleasant. And we got the building to rewrite that, saying that there were exceptions for assistive and mobility devices. So it's like bicycles, skateboards, scooters, et cetera, has to use the service elevator. But if you're using a wheelchair or a rollerator, then you can use the public lobby elevator.
I love that. I mean, one, I am all about, how do we take this theory or this like high level concept and make it a reality for people so people can see what they can actually do? And I think both examples you just gave show that beautifully. And it's also just a reminder, and maybe I always have the best intentions for people, but like it's that whole when you know better, you do better thing. Like if no one had spoken up to them and no one on that team who wrote that policy had ever had that experience, it probably didn't even occur to them.
And that's the thing, is so many people just, they don't even think about it because they don't realize it because they don't have that experience. Yeah. And I think it was, again, I was the first one to come in there and say, hey, I occasionally use a wheelchair. Does this mean I have to use the service elevator? Because that doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
And they hadn't even thought about it.
Yeah. But then they were willing to
work
with you guys. And that's, you know, obviously what you're looking for at the end of the day is someone who will go, oh my gosh, wow, we didn't even think about it.
Yes.
And now that we see it, let's do something about it.
Exactly. So.
Yeah. Amazing. All right. So let's talk about your experience internally. And I don't mean your, just anyone's experience internally when you are navigating work with a known disability. So what in your experience should employees keep in mind before asking for accommodations?
The biggest thing I would say to keep in mind is before you have that meeting, before you even set up or request that meeting, think about what you're really asking for. Do you need to work from home 3 days a week instead of one or two if you're working a hybrid schedule? Do you need to get all of your instructions and assignments in writing? Do you need an assistive note taker during Zoom calls? Do you need something physically installed in your office? Think about what that ask is going to be, because the meeting should not just be, hey, I just want to let you know I have a disability. Now, to be fair, I've had those meetings of just letting you know. But there should be some kind of ask, even if the ask is, what I need is for your understanding on days that I'm having a lot of pain. I'm not asking for anything specific. I'm not asking for a different schedule. I just need you to know that there's going to be days that I'm moving a little slower. And I just need your patience. Because that's not really, it doesn't seem like a formal accommodation, but that still is an accommodation. It's leaning more on the human side of accommodations rather than the legal side. And I'd say once you're in that meeting, stick to the facts is my other advice. It can be really tempting to go into detail to feel like you have to prove your need, sit there and say, okay, well, I have this condition and it means that I'm in pain sometimes. And that means that I can't commute. So working from home is going to be really helpful. And coming into the office is just, you don't need to go into all the detail of what the pain feels like or how it affects you. Stick to the facts. In that first meeting, your goal is not necessarily to convince, it's to inform. So you're letting them know, this is what I need to be successful. And then you give them a chance to respond. Because sometimes the response is, yeah, absolutely, work whatever schedule makes sense for you. And sometimes the response might be, I need to take this back to our senior VP to make sure that they're on board with an adjusted schedule. But you don't have to go into all the detail. Give the basic facts of what you're asking for and then let them respond.
When you talk about detail, and I am coming from the perspective of having never disclosed a disability, I've realized late in life that I do have ADHD, I'm neurodivergent, but I've been self-employed for so long that I already know. So I'm wondering, I genuinely don't know, if you come and ask for an accommodation, are you required to disclose what the disability is, even if you're not getting into XYZ thing about how it feels or what is happening? Or can you just ask for the accommodation? I don't know.
You can ask for the accommodation without disclosing what the disability is. In some workplaces, your best practice might be to say, I'm requesting a formal accommodation under the ADA. If you're saying, I have a protected disability that allows me to make this request, but you don't have to say what that disability is. That's not required, and that is not your job. Some people may ask for it and demand it. Legally, you don't have to give it. And again, I will caveat, not a lawyer, just really nerdy about the ADA.
Yeah. Well, I think it's an important, again, I don't know what I don't know. Do you think that's common knowledge for most people who have a disability and are going to go disclose that or ask for an accommodation? Or do you think that that's maybe something that keeps people from saying something?
I think that's absolutely a barrier right now. I think people believe, well, if I'm going to ask for something, I have to tell them what this is and what my diagnosis is and what it means like and what medication I'm taking and how I'm handling it. You don't. You don't have to tell them any of that. All you need to do is say, I have this condition. That means what I need is all my instructions in writing. If you give me verbal directions, I'm not going to be able to be successful. So I'm just going to ask that when you give me assignments, they're written.
Oh, huge. So powerful. That's really, really helpful to understand. What if you don't know what you need? Is there a case where people go and feel like there's going to be, I'm just genuinely, we're diverging a little bit here, but like, do people go and say, hey, I'm disclosing it that I have this disability. I'm wondering what you can do. Or do you feel like people genuinely usually know what they need and ask for it?
I think it's most helpful if you go into that conversation knowing what you need, because if you don't know what's going to be helpful, you're the one who's living with the condition and your manager or your HR partner is not going to be able to say, well, of course, here is what you need, because they don't know how it might affect you. What you can say is, here's what I'm having trouble with, and I think it's related to my disability. I'm having trouble keeping track of my to-do list. I'm having trouble remembering all my tasks and following through. And I think it has to do with this neurological condition I have. What advice do you have? And then you might have a manager or business partner who can work with you on task tracking, or, okay, well, let's make sure that we have a stand-up meeting every day where we go over your priorities. And then that, again, not necessarily a formal accommodation, but it is a form of accommodation where you're just working in different ways with people. The thing I keep going back to is people aren't robots. You can't treat them all exactly the same way and expect the same output. People are going to need different things. Some people do really well if you're like, here's what I'd like to see. And they're like, great. And they're off and running and you don't really need to check in with them at all. And you know that they're going to handle it. Some people might need a little more support. They might need a little more handholding. They might need a little more guidance. And this might depend on people's working styles, where they are in their career. And it could also depend on neurodivergence. It could depend on a lot of things. So it may not even need to be an accommodation or a disability disclosure conversation. It may just be a performance conversation of, hey, I'm struggling with this element. What can we do? And you still don't necessarily need to have that full disclosure if you're not ready or comfortable.
That's a huge important piece. And one of the things that's been in the back of my mind as you've been sharing a lot of this is, yes, managers make accommodations for people all the time that are not medical disability related. It's about so many things. One of my favorite things from the management training I built is this idea of a README or a user manual, mm-hmm. because we all have different quirks and things, and we know ourselves and we know how we like to work. And when we share that as a team, when we all go, oh, hey, here's how I work best. Hey, by the way, if you get me in the morning, I'm going to be a lot shorter than I am at 2 p.m. It's just my brain wake. You know, whatever the thing is, we make accommodations for each other all the time.
Totally.
And yeah, like you said, there's another level. And I'm like having so many ha-ha's during this conversation because it feels like such an obvious thing that, like, if you were going to go disclose this formally, that you would know what you're asking for. Duh. But it's never occurred to me that that is the piece of the meeting that is so important to prepare for. So
yeah, that's really the important part. And again, you can miss a lot of that. You don't necessarily have to do that if you just have those human conversations with your manager about, like, this is my working style. Here's how I communicate best. Something that we do on my current team is we have a work with me document that every new hire fills out, which is like, these are my communication preferences. These are my pet peeves on Slack. Here's the best way to reach me. Here's the best way to follow up. Here's my working schedule. And that alone erases so many things, because I can put something in there like, hey, if you're going to message me on Slack, please put the ask in the first message. I can't stand when someone messages me like, good morning, period. And then I'm like, what do you need? But in a personal one-on-one meeting, I don't necessarily want to launch right in. I do like that human element of like, hey, how was your weekend? How's your Friday going? How are things? You know, what's going on? What's new with you? Oh my gosh, it's raining here. How are you doing in the storm? That human element is important to me in those meetings. So I can have that in that document and feel connected with people without feeling like people are wasting my time. And I think it's important to have that knowledge and do that little self-reflection of, how do I work best?
Sorry, I'm all giddy because I so strongly, it's what I call a README or user manual is what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
And I love that you're doing it. And it is, it's two-sided because it is a looking inward too and actually thinking about, wait, how do I work best? Like, what things do I need or want? And again, never occurred to me that that document could be a powerful way for people to outline needs and desires without having to formally disclose a disability.
Yeah.
And now I'm like even more excited about that.
Yeah. I mean, so you can think of it as like an informal accommodation request. And again, yeah, if it helps, everybody needs accommodations because nobody works the same. And those accommodations, again, might be, I prefer getting notifications in Slack versus email, or I prefer hopping on a call to discuss an issue rather than going back and forth on Teams. Those are accommodations.
Yeah, they totally are. Yeah. Oh, this is such a great, just all the ahas for me today. Okay. So amazing. What do you call them? Work style agreements?
Work with me documents. But work, I really like, I really like a user guide.
Yeah. It came out of, so READMEs are like the pieces in code,
right,
that have like, yeah. And so that's kind of how it started, was with some engineering teams. I think it was GitHub that started this whole README. The CEO there actually has a public one. Like, you can go on mm-hmm. and read his whole thing. And then I think that became like user manual in terms of like, here's a user manual for me. But I actually like yours too, the work with me.
Yeah. And most people have them, like, it's just a Google Doc, and most people then yeah. have it available to the whole org and linked in their Slack profile so that you can yeah. see easily anyone you might collaborate with. Hey, how should I best communicate with them?
It's such a small but incredibly powerful thing that I just love that you guys do and advocate for all the time. So, all right. So those aside, say that you do need to take it one step further. You do need to actually ask for a really specific accommodation and you want to approach your manager. If I am that manager, how should I respond when an employee is asking me for an accommodation or disclosing disability?
So I'll respond to this with a couple of personal examples. I've had to disclose my disability multiple times in various workplaces. Some happy to do so. Some, you know, okay, this is just something I'm really at a point where I need to ask. And that's, you know, different times in my career, different levels of comfort with my own disability. But I've had managers respond really well and some not so well. So I'd say the middle of the road response is, okay, let's bring in HR for next steps. it's correct. It's appropriate, but it is missing that human element, which I think is such a key part of responding to this, acknowledging this, and building that trust with your employee. So a much better response would be something like, thank you so much for telling me. Let's work together to figure out how we can get you the support or the access that you need. That manager can still bring in HR, but you're being less hands-off, you're being less robotic. And as a manager, again, you want to be warm and supportive so you can continue to foster trust with your team, with your direct reports. These are people that you need to work with every day. You don't want them to see you as my manager who does my performance reviews and otherwise I don't feel comfortable talking to them. That human element is so, so key in responding, even if you're uncomfortable. And I know a lot of managers I've talked to and worked with get uncomfortable when an employee brings this to them. And they just get, they freeze up. They say, I don't know what to do. I don't know the correct thing to say. The correct thing to say, if nothing else, if you remember one thing, it's thank you for telling me. Acknowledge that that might be a hard conversation for that employee to have. As uncomfortable as you are, this is something that's really personal and could be really difficult for them to speak about. So make sure that they feel like you're a welcoming, receptive presence to them telling you, this is what I need.
It's, I think, human for managers in certain scenarios that they've not been in before to freeze up. And so I love having just really a simple approach and coming from a place of being human and just the acknowledgement that this is likely a hard thing that this person just came to you and asked you for. Maybe not for everybody, but it is something that maybe they had to work up a little bit of bravery to do. And so just that simple response of thank you so much for telling me. I mean, I feel like that could be across so many things.
It's like, something that I coach every manager. Like, yeah. Feedback is a gift in every direction. And feedback, I know, can be a whole other topic. And I know it has been. Yeah. But feedback can go in multiple directions. And an employee saying to you as a manager, here's what I need from you, that's also feedback. That's saying, hey, manager, here's something you can do in your management style to help make me more successful. That's feedback. And you as a manager should know that feedback is a good thing. Everyone should want more feedback because it helps us grow. It makes us better. So if you see it that way and you know feedback is a gift, you thank someone for a gift.
Thanking someone for a gift. There you go. Keeps it easy. Yeah. One of the things that I know I struggled with as a manager earlier on in my career was like feeling like I had to have all the answers. Like it's my job to have all the answers. And I learned fairly quickly, probably not quickly enough, but fairly quickly that it wasn't my job to have all the answers. It was my job to be a support system and a bridge.
Yes.
To figuring out what the solution is together. And I think that's what this answer does is remove the responsibility from knowing exactly what to say or do or how to take it through to the next step and just is a bridge of empathy.
Yes.
And an open door.
Yeah. And the manager's job is not to know everything or be perfect, but it is a manager's job to know what resources are available or where to find them. So you might say, okay, I don't necessarily know how to respond to this, but I know that I have an HR business partner who specializes in this, whose job it is to bridge that space between employees and the business to make sure people have what they need. So I might not know the answer, but I know the person who does. I know where to find the answer. And so that, I think, is the role of the manager. It's very similar to, you know, in college, we had in the dorms, resident advisors, and the RA, their job is not to know everything, but it's to say, hey, let's get you to campus security. Let's get you to some mental health services. You know where these resources are. You are not the resource, and that's okay.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm here with you on this journey.
Yes.
Like, I am not just going to hand you off to someone. I am going to make sure you get what you need at the end of the day, however long that takes and however many conversations or paths we have to go down.
Exactly. Yes. It's, I will partner with you in this. I'm here for you. Yeah. I'm supporting you. I have your back.
Yeah, it's such an important part of management. And I think is a much more common part. I talk all the time about how we've kind of shifted from this very like fear-based command and control approach of management to a much more empathetic coaching style management, sometimes so far that it becomes a detriment, but that's again, a whole nother conversation. But I think we have moved in the right direction as people, but do you have any examples of things that people really should not say when approached with this?
Yes. And again, I will lean on a personal example. So one way not to respond was on full display by a manager I talked to right at the beginning of my career. I had just been diagnosed with a chronic degenerative condition. I have a disability called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which does affect my joints and ligaments and makes it pretty painful to stand or walk for long periods of time. I had just started using a wheelchair, and I was thrilled about my wheelchair because to me, the wheelchair meant freedom. Some people see wheelchairs as restrictive or a trap or say some things like confined to a wheelchair, which please don't ever say that. Anyone who uses a wheelchair knows that it really opens up the world. We can now do things, we can go places that would otherwise be closed off to us. So to me, I started using this wheelchair and I was over the moon excited because it meant that I could do all these things that previously I didn't have the energy to do. At that time, I was at a job where I was attending a lot of events and meeting with external partners, external clients. And so I told my manager that I had just started using a wheelchair. This wasn't even me asking for an accommodation. This was really like a conversational, like, oh, what's new? And I was like, oh, I just got a wheelchair. I'm so excited about it. I got to like go to the zoo and actually spend all day there instead of having to go home after 45 minutes. I was really young and green, so I was more focused on just telling her this exciting life update for me rather than asking for anything. I really wasn't asking for anything. I wasn't saying like, oh, I got this wheelchair and I'm going to start using it to the office, or I got this wheelchair and I'd like permission to add a ramp or an elevator or anything. I just was telling her, this is an exciting thing that happened in my life. She got this really skeptical look on her face and she just said, okay, maybe just don't use that around clients. Illegal. To be clear, illegal. Don't do that. Oh my God, don't do that. She was so worried about what it would look like to clients that she really didn't even think about what I might be feeling or needing as her employee and as a person. So that's exactly what you shouldn't do. Don't tell them, hide your disability, or like, I wish you hadn't told me. That's super inappropriate.
I mean, it feels like it should be common sense.
It does. It does feel like that. And yet, again, I think it's managers don't necessarily have the training. They don't have the knowledge. They're faced with something new. They get scared. And people react in different ways when they get scared. Sometimes they clam up and they just do the like, okay, I don't want to hear about this. Please just talk to HR. And sometimes they say something that is really biased and awful.
Yeah. I heard at the beginning of the story, you saying, you know, this is when I was younger. Can I ask how you reacted to that when she said that?
I think I just kind of was like, oh, okay, sure. And didn't really bring it up again. And that was before I worked in HR. That story isn't the reason that I moved into HR, but it has a lot to do with why I made the career move that I did. I know that there are so many people like me who have had an experience like that, who have been green, who have worked up the courage to bring something up at work, something personal, something really hard, something about their health, something that doesn't, a lot of people would say is inappropriate for work because it makes people uncomfortable, but it's a lot of people's reality. And I know so many of those people have that kind of experience where someone tells them, please keep that to yourself, or don't talk about that, or I don't want to hear this. And they never talk about it again. And then you hear companies say, I want you to bring your whole authentic self to work. And people are like, you're saying one thing and showing me another. That's why I moved into this HR space, is I want people to know that they have someone in the back office who has their back, who knows where they're coming from, who understands, and is, I'm doing everything I can to make sure managers know, don't respond that way. Treat people like humans. And like you said, you'd think it'd be common sense. But sometimes managers just, they freak out and they don't know what to do.
Yeah. I mean, we've all said the wrong thing before.
Yes.
There's no doubt about that.
Oh, absolutely.
I've had those moments.
I definitely, and I never claim to be perfect. I've definitely said things where I realize like, that was not the appropriate thing.
Yeah. No. And I mean, to me, it's about talking about these things so that other people can learn from the experience and potentially either not do it themselves or, you know, it's learning and moving forward. I'm putting you on the spot asking you this, but is there anything you would have done differently if you had been put in that position today? Would you have said something different? Would you have walked away and done something afterwards?
Knowing what I know now, if I were counseling myself as an employee, I would advise them, talk to your HR business partner, bring up this interaction, keep it to the facts. Like, hey, I said this, here's what my manager said in response. It made me feel uncomfortable or unsafe. And then kind of let them lead, because that is their job. Now, again, I know a lot of companies have really bad HR who will not actually support employees. And in that case, maybe you have to take it up further. And that's not easy. It's not comfortable. Sometimes it's not cheap. But there are definitely ways that you can and should ask for the things that you are entitled to and deserve, not just under the law, but as a person.
I think the point about there's so many people in this space, so many, you, myself, there's a ton of people in this space who are trying to change the perception around HR, around human resources. There's always going to be, you know, we just said it, nothing's going to be perfect. There's always going to be better examples and worse examples from, you know, a behavioral perspective. My question when you were saying that is like, how do you know if how your HR person is going to respond? And I think it comes down to the experience that they've had in the company so far and maybe what the relationship is that they've built. You know, has HR tried to sort of bridge the gap to employees and make themselves available and trustworthy? That's probably the difference of how you know, I guess.
Yeah.
Either way, advocate for yourself.
And if it's not HR directly, if you're saying, I don't know who my HR person is, I'm at a big organization, I have no idea, or like, I know who my HR person is, but I don't trust them, like they're friends with my manager, I don't think they'd be, you know, totally unbiased about this. There's hopefully someone that you're comfortable with at the office. Maybe it's a peer of your manager. Maybe it's your manager's manager. Maybe it's someone who works on the same team as you, but at a different level, that you can talk to and say, hey, I had this experience. What do you think I should do? And just having even one person on your side as an advocate who can maybe help you have that conversation, who can support you as you figure out who else can I talk to make this right. Just having one person in your corner can make a huge difference, because I think it can be so isolating when you feel like you have to hide a true part of yourself. And this goes for so many people. This goes beyond disability. Obviously, my experience is with disability, but so many people feel like I don't have a single ally here that I can rely on. And I think you can get that when you open up a little bit and you tell someone, this is my experience. What would you do if you were me?
Yeah. I had a similar experience when I was very young in my career from a sexual harassment standpoint, and did eventually take it to HR only because I was quitting and they kept pressing me on why, and then had a horrible reaction and there had a horrible response from the HR person. And it is what actually pushed me into doing this work. But I always look back at that younger version of myself and think, you know, what would I have done differently if it was today? And I think the earlier you are in your career, I think the harder it can be to advocate for yourself sometimes. But I like your advice of, if it's not your manager, if it's not a people ops HR person, who in the company do you feel you could go to and have a conversation? Because it shouldn't be this scary thing. And I know that for good reason, there's sometimes a stigma around, if I take this to HR, it's going to get blown out of control. And my manager, you know, you spiral. Yes. My manager is going to get fired. And this is, you know, and so you just shove it down. You just don't do anything. But I think we have to keep reminding people to have the conversation, and that 9 times out of 10, the scary outcome isn't going to happen.
Yes.
You're going to find another path forward. I think we have to move out of that space of the worst case scenario is going to happen if I go to someone and open up about this.
Yes. And I mean, maybe you're in a position where everyone at your work is someone that you feel like you can't trust. It doesn't have to be
please
someone.
Please leave.
Yeah, please leave. Please quit if you can.
Please leave. Yeah. But yes. Sorry.
But if you're in that position, you know,
yes,
talk to someone, because again, it gets so isolating. And yes, there are so many communities out there that you can join and be a part of where people are going to support you. People are going to see you. People are going to say, that's not right. Here's what you can do. Here's what I will help you do. And that's where you need to have that community, whether it's at work or otherwise. And I always recommend having a community outside of work. It's important
100%
to have people yes. that you can talk to and say, hey, everyone at my work is nuts, and they're telling me that I am not allowed to use a wheelchair. And you can have one person outside of work who can be like, oh, they all sound crazy and illegal, and they can't say that to you. And even if you don't take any action, the validation is so important. I've told this story of this manager so many times, and every time I tell the story and people react by just dropping their jaw and saying, I cannot believe she said that to you, I think it heals a little more for me. It's just that extra validation of like, yeah, that was an experience I shouldn't have had. And every time I talk about it, it helps.
I just got goosebumps, like that healing a little part of yourself. When we talk about things and share our experience and parts of ourselves, it's really healing.
Yeah.
So that's fully true. And yes, to having community outside of the workplace. The reason I got so fiery and passionate about leave is because I say a lot, like, you know, we're so quick as a society now, if there's like an abusive or toxic relationship, that we are like, get out at any means, like, we'll help you, come live here, come whatever. And when it's a toxic job, we're like, well, work just kind of sucks, like, deal with it. And I just wish more people knew, like, one, there are places that aren't toxic. Like, they do exist. We're working really hard to make more of them, but they do exist. And there are always going to be cases when there is a paycheck involved that you have to stay. I'm not trying to shame anyone around that, but I think we should talk more about people finding any other way and a choice to leave when stuff is toxic, because it doesn't have to be that way.
Yes.
Sorry, I get so passionate about this.
No, I mean, it's true, because being in a toxic work environment like that, where people don't believe you, people don't trust you, people don't let you live authentically, you feel like you're scared all the time, it warps your sense of reality. And it can take a long time to come back to understanding what is okay. I mean, I've heard so many stories, people who have been in these really terrible work environments, they go to another company that's absolutely lovely, and they flounder because they're only used to trauma, and they don't know how to succeed in an environment where they're not fearful all the time, where they don't have to be fearful, where their manager actually wants them to be successful. I have a friend right now who's leaving a really terrible toxic job, and I'm thrilled for her. And her manager like yells at her all the time. And her new job, she's like, I'm so excited. Every time I've talked to this, like my new manager, she's been so lovely. But what if I go there and she's awful? Like, that's not normal. You're not going to experience that. Like, yeah. You've been in this world for so long that you forget what it can be like when you're not.
Yes. And that is why these conversations are so important. We need people to understand what can be, so that it isn't just this belief that that's how it is everywhere.
Yes.
Because what you see is what you know. I mean, that's just what you're surrounded with, is your reality. That's end of the day, that's how the brain works. Very technical explanation there of just how the brain works, guys. But yeah, until you can see something else, until you have someone else saying that's not normal, or like, oh, this does exist over here, it's hard to believe it, because you're like, no, that don't know. Don't buy it. Yeah, I have a friend who quit a toxic job about 8 months ago without something else lined up, and granted, had a security system of a spouse who they were able to make that choice together. And that doesn't always happen. And I know that, but she did. And I just got a text from her this morning that she got a new job offer at this place that she's so excited about, working with a manager that she's worked for in the past that she adores. Like, it just like makes my heart so happy. I'm like, I'm so proud of you.
I don't even know this person, and I'm thrilled for them.
I know.
I'm so excited.
I know. She could not be a more deserving human. I mean, all of us deserve to be in these work environments, but
truly, yes, that's what it comes down to, is everyone should be able to feel safe and secure at work. That feels so bare minimum.
Table stakes.
It really should be, table stakes, but
isn't.
No,
in a lot of places.
Because like we said, there's so many managers who, I mean, even beyond managers who are intentionally awful, there are managers who just they're awful because they don't know anything else. They don't have the training. They don't have the knowledge. So I think it's so important for managers to continue to seek out these resources and to recognize, like, you don't have to know everything, but you should treat people like humans and do your best to grow. That's really, yes. I feel like, all we can ask of managers and leaders is just keep learning.
Yeah, that's it. At the end of the day. And then the golden rule, treat others like you would want to be treated.
Truly.
Bingo, bango. Done. Okay, so there are a lot of HR people ops professionals that listen to this show. I'm curious, could you share a little bit, as you are in that role, what are some of the best practices for HR people? So, like, for instance, in my last role, if someone had come to me with this type of request, it would have been a first for me. I would have, I think, reacted positively in a way of like, thank you, and we're going to figure it out. It would have been a new thing. So what are some best practices? Where do people go to learn about this?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, obviously, number one best practice, follow the law. There's an interactive process to follow. Ultimately, formal accommodation requests are legal things. There are laws that you do need to stick with. Okay. But don't miss the human element. So I feel like those two together are the real best practice, is have both of those in your mind equally. Because if, while the human element is important, if we only think about that, then that's where we get to the position where I sit there and I'm like, yeah, sure, everyone can have 50 weeks of parental leave. Absolutely. Everyone can just work an hour a day if that's good for you. Like, sure. Obviously, that's not reasonable. And so, as much as I would love to give everybody all the time off in the world and all of the mental health support and all of the space, we unfortunately live in a capitalist society where we do need to kind of continue with business, for better or worse. So I'd say, beyond that, best practices, don't assume that you know what that employee might need. Don't make assumptions at all, but if the employee comes to you and maybe they don't know exactly how to ask for what they need, but they just come to you and they say, hey, I want to just let you know formally that I have this condition or this disability or this experience. And maybe they're not making a request. They're just saying, I feel like I need to tell you that I have this. That's fine. Don't assume that what they're saying is, I'm telling you that I need to have this, and now I need you to fix everything. They might just be under the impression that it's their responsibility to inform, that I have to disclose this. Mm. Ask questions and listen. And again, that same thank you so much for telling me applies for HR as well as managers. Thank you for telling me. What can I do to support you? How can I make you be successful? And if they mm-hmm. say, well, I don't really know yet, say, okay, well, I'm here to partner with you if there's anything specific. If someone's asking for something specific, balance the needs of the business with the needs of the employee and their health. So if the employee says, hey, I'm dealing with really bad anxiety, I'm stressed all the time. Anytime I get a Teams call, I have a panic attack. So I need to reduce my work hours to only work Tuesdays and Thursdays. That might not be something the business can accommodate. But maybe you could say, okay, well, let's like maybe turn notification noises off, or let's say that your manager has to let you know and schedule calls rather than just calling you out of the blue. You can work with, offer different ideas, but make sure you're managing expectations about, they might not get the exact thing they're looking for if what they're looking for is not going to be something the business can do. So if someone's asking for like an alternate schedule, maybe they only meet with clients 3 days a week and use the other two for internal projects. If what they're saying is, hey, I've got anxiety and these client meetings are super stressful and I'm not feeling well. What I like to do is, I don't assume that I know the needs of each business unit. So I might say, okay, great. I hear you that this is what you're looking for. To me, that sounds like it's potentially doable. I'm going to check with the business lead. So maybe that person's manager, their department head, whatever it looks like in the structure of your organization. So I'll have that conversation with the manager and say, this is what this person is requesting. And again, I don't need to pass on, they have this condition, this is what their experience is. I'm just saying, we've got an accommodation request. This person would like to meet with clients only 3 days a week instead of five. Is that something the business can accommodate? That's always my question. Can the business accommodate this? I also like to paint a really clear picture of the alternative, because sometimes managers will say, well, what if I say no? What if the business can't accommodate it? Then what do? Do we say, tough luck, you've got to work 5 days a week? And often in my experience, the answer might be, well, in that case, if you can't accommodate this and that person cannot work with clients 5 days a week, they might need to go on medical leave. They might need to go, you know, focus on their health and take time away from work. They physically cannot do these meetings 5 days a week. So I always paint that picture to say it might be better to meet someone part way and be balanced instead of drawing a line in the sand and then saying, okay, well, then instead of getting this person 3 days a week, you're getting them zero because now they're on leave. So I think it's important to really paint that picture for managers, lay it out for them, understand that this may be new for them too. So explain, here's the situation, here's the proposal, here's the alternate if you say no. And the alternate if you say no might be, maybe we come back and say, can you do 4 days a week, but we'll only have them in the mornings? Or can you do 5 days a week, but we'll keep Fridays to only two meetings and really light? Maybe there's kind of back and forth there. That's all part of the interactive process. So I think those best practices are really the key things, is follow the law, but also be human, bring the manager in on a need to know basis, and paint a picture for them of what that accommodation might look like and what the other options could be.
Brilliant. I am thinking about worst case scenarios, managers that don't react well, managers that have some type of retribution, whether that's just like having an off attitude or not putting them on certain projects. When someone comes to you with an accommodation, do you personally tend to follow up with them and check in? Or do you sort of let it move forward and trust that if someone is having an experience because of what they disclosed, they will come to you?
I like to really make sure that managers know kind of my role of, hey, if an employee is coming to you with questions, bring it to me if you're not sure where to go, and loop me in general. I like to make sure that employees know on like a large scale level as much as I can, depending on the size of the organization. Hey, if you have any questions, like open door, come to me with anything. And even if I'm not the right person, I'll get you to the right person. And I do think the follow-up is important, to go back to the employee and say, hey, I had a conversation with the manager. Here's where we landed. I really like to act as that facilitator because I recognize that so many managers don't know how to have those conversations. They don't know where to kind of balance the needs of the business with the human side. I've definitely had managers who are like, well, you know, we want to do what we can for this person, but then behind closed doors, they'll be like, I don't think she's going to last. I don't think she's going to, like, if she can't deal with these calls, kind of like, okay, well, we can't do things in that way. We can't retaliate. We can't pull people off of things necessarily. You can't say, oh, well, she's got this accommodation request, then I'm not going to consider her for this other project. Now, it might be, well, we can only consider people who are working full-time for this project, and she's, you know, gone down to 3 days a week. So that might be something, but you can't say, we're not going to consider her specifically.
Perfect world is that that is not the reaction that a manager has. And, you know, I could just imagine a really stressed out manager who's got a team who is incredibly overworked, and that overwork is causing potential issues for someone with a disability. That person steps forward, says they need some help. You go to that manager, and the manager, out of stress, goes, now what am I supposed to do? Because now, like, you know, like, there isn't a way we can do this. And then that person goes on leave, and now I can't backfill them. And so I think, again, so much good intention sometimes gets parlayed by high pressure, stress, capitalism. It's always capitalism's fault, let's be honest.
It always comes down to that, doesn't it?
It comes down to capitalism. But yeah, so that's why I bring that up, because I think you always hope for the best. And then sometimes when that doesn't happen, I would hate for someone to feel like they're out there floating. And then that's why they next time go, oh, well, I'm not going to come forward next time because it caused XYZ.
Yeah. And that's why I, again, everyone needs an advocate. I always do my best to be that advocate for the employee, especially if the manager won't. Then I'm going to, like, kind of double go to bat for that employee and be like, okay, you've got a manager who's being unreasonable, so let me do what I can for you on the back end. Let me paint a picture of the, you know, what this could look like for the manager to understand, hey, if you're not willing to meet this employee halfway, we're going to lose them. And that's not a good thing. Like, look at the great work they've done.
Yes. And by the way, this is why HR people ops are so burnt out.
Yes.
Because this is the unseen labor that most really successful people ops leaders are doing, have been doing, continue to do. And it is the part of the job that isn't seen. So again.
Oh, yeah.
This is why we need more people.
We're therapists. We're ground control. Oh, yeah. We're engineers building the train tracks. We're all of it. We're doing a little bit of everything. And obviously, everyone is. I'm not saying HR is more stressed than anyone else. But I think it's a lot harder for people to see everything that HR does unless you live in it.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that anybody else doesn't have a stressful job, but I do think that there is, just like how there is this sort of invisible labor attached to the female gender and has been for a lot of years, I think that there is a lot of invisible labor that is attached to people ops and HR roles that then leads to a lot of burnout, because the people who are building the budgets don't see it and don't understand why you need more help. And sometimes as HR and people ops people, we're not great at being able to explain it ourselves, why we need more help and why we're so anyway, it's another, apparently because I have not recorded a podcast episode in 4 months, I'm just here with all my soapbox issues, just laying everything out.
We're just
all
giving
in
you
one
a
episode.
List of here's all the other topics you need to cover.
Oh, man,
HR is burnt out. We're carrying so much. Yes. Feedback, manager training, all of it.
Oh, it's fine. We're going to fix it.
Capitalism.
This specific, my podcast, we are going to fix capitalism, guys. Don't you worry.
I'm so glad to have you on the case.
We're on it. All right. So I clearly had 800 more questions and could sit here with you and talk about this for another 2 hours. But I would love to know from your perspective, if there is someone who's listening to this and is like, I want to go back and start doing better in this area in our organization, can you think of any like low hanging fruit areas? What's that low hanging fruit thing that you would want someone to take away with them and kind of put into action in their company?
Absolutely. I think the one big takeaway is the mindset shift away from thinking of accommodation as a purely legal process and something that really does have that human element. A lot of people think of the law as like, it's black and white. It's very laid out. It's hard lines. It's not. There's a lot of gray. There's a lot of blur. There's a lot of squiggle, if you will. Things aren't always one size fits all. There's not one solution to every issue that comes up. There's not always going to be a very clear path to follow. The flowchart goes in a lot of directions. Bring the humanity back to it. I think that's the biggest takeaway, is recognize that this is hard for everyone. So be gentle with each other.
Love that. Love that so much. Thank you so much, Leah, for being here.
Thank you for having me. This was such a great conversation.
Yeah. Hey, shaking off the dust here. But yes, I have no doubt that there'll be more conversations to come. And we just so appreciate you sharing your time. This is really beautiful. So thank you.
Thank you.
This show was brought to you by WantToWorkThere.com and the incredible team at Podcasting for Creatives. No individual or company acting alone can change our societal beliefs about work, but together we can create a new normal. If you like this episode, please consider passing it on to one or two people who share your passion for creating a better world of work. And until next time, please know I see you, I believe in you, and keep going. The work you're doing really matters.